Marino Sarah Biggs. So welcome, Sarah. For those who don't know, you're going to be the treat. With her bright pink shoes on. Love it. So welcome, Sarah. I know God has just laid on your heart some stuff, and we're going to get real this morning. So everyone ready? Buckle up.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Check to rearrange something.
All right,
we'll do some rearranging. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, I'll leave you go. No, I'm going to go and sit up the back.
Okay.
Because I got the cops.
Okay. I've just got the cops.
Okay, so those of you who know me, you know I don't use one of these.
Welcome to the forward, Sarah, or your cops.
So I will try.
Just got to stay back behind that.
Try not to make a mess. All right.
You've got to be behind.
I won't go before that. I'll send a nice screech into the room. Okay.
Do you want the lectern?
So I have.
Do you want the lectern move?
You can do that if you like. Yeah, sure. All right, so I want to start with a story because, you know, that's what I do. All right, so let's start. Glenn and I were in the Philippines and we were working with an orphanage over there. And this orphanage had a couple of kids in it who just melted my heart. And we were working with them for several years. And over those years, we got to take the boys home with us on the weekends. We got to take them home over the Christmas break and over Easter break. They became part of our family. In fact, they were so much part of my family and our family that my son, Ethan, who was about 5 at the time, he would introduce everybody to his big brother, Jojo. So there were a lot of boys, but Jojo came with us every week. Every week, every Christmas, and he became part of our family. Over a period of time, Glenn and I started talking and we really began to pray about it, and we decided that we really wanted to adopt Jojo. This was a journey that we had taken and it wasn't lightly. And so we went to the various government departments to start the paperwork, and we encountered a big hiccup. And it wasn't the government, and it wasn't Jojo, and it wasn't us. It was the person who was in charge of the orphanage. You see, Jojo was an important money raiser for her. Because his story was terrible. And every time people visited the orphanage, he would tell his story, and people's hearts would be moved. So when we went to go and start the paperwork at the orphanage to actually adopt him, she told us to leave, never come back, and we weren't allowed to come on the premises ever again. And that was the last day that we saw him. Oh my gosh, it hurt. I can't even tell you how much it hurt. Put the PowerPoint up. And all right, let's see if I can make it work. Oh, I can. On the day he turned 18, he found me on Facebook. And he started sending me photos. And I have my son back. And I'm going to do a lot of crying this morning. I can just tell. I didn't get the pleasure of raising him for all of his life, but we can see the impact that we were able to have in him for that short period of time that we had him. And one of the things that I loved doing with him while he was with us for those 3 years, is we would lead worship together. I love worship. You all know that. I absolutely love worship. It is my expression of great joy to the King who has done so much for me. I cannot live a week without worship just pouring out of me. And worship was such an integral part of my life in the Philippines. And the second photo he sent me, he's a worship leader.
Wow.
He is a pastor now. He's a worship leader. And he runs mission trips from the Philippines to the Middle East. And I love those stories where God restores that which was stolen, where you walk through the process of forgiving and all of a sudden things turn out well. Don't you love those stories. They are magnificent. They are wonderful. And I love sharing those stories. Some of you have heard some of the amazing testimonies I have of what God has done. But what happens when forgiveness doesn't result in the freedom that we expect? What happens when we forgive, but the outcome isn't that beautiful story? What happens when forgiveness isn't the amazing freedom that we were hoping for? Now, don't get me wrong. Forgiveness is key to freedom. We cannot function in any level of freedom without forgiveness. But sometimes what we want is we want the first story. We want to forgive and we want restoration. And that's what we want to live. Forgiveness, then restoration, and live happily ever after.
Sounds good to me.
But that's not how life works sometimes. And this morning I'm going to talk about two areas of my life where I have found pain hits the hardest, it sticks the longest, and I needed help in my journey of forgiveness. So the first one is family pain. Family has this ability to get under your skin.
Yes.
They know you. They're close to you. They journey through life with you. And whether, in my case, it's my sibling, or whether it's your children, your grandchildren, when they go off the path and head off away from God's kingdom, there is a pain there that you can't put into words. It just hurts like it hurts. And there's no way to explain it. When I was a young adult, just beginning the journey of adulthood, my sister, who was in the same church as me, got incredibly, nastily hurt by one of the pastors at the church. And since I've learnt what happened, and there is a great deal of pain, and I had to actually work through anger after I found out what had happened. At the time, my parents decided not to tell me too much of what was going on, but I just knew something was very wrong in our household. My sister was hurting and angry. My parents were frustrated and hurting and angry. And I was just oblivious. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew something was wrong. Over a period of 6 months, the house situation became to the point where I just didn't want to be at home. It was just too much. I couldn't handle it. But I also came to realize that the church had been the cause of what was happening in my home. So over a period of 6 months, I changed from the fun, passionate, excited person who just absolutely adored God and wanted to be in the church every time the doors were open to I didn't want to be in my family's house, I didn't want to be in church, and in fact, I didn't want to be near Christians because Christians had wrecked my family. And it hurt. And I didn't forgive easily. I grew up in the church. My parents have always been in leadership. Always. But what I have discovered is this kind of pain, it just goes on and on and on. Have you ever been sunburnt? Yeah, you're really sunburnt and somebody comes up to you and touches you on the sunburn and you're like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, that hurts. Don't touch me there, please. Don't touch. Even when you forgive, sometimes it still hurts. But that hurt can't stop you from forgiving. You have to forgive. And not because the outcome is the most amazing thing ever. You have to forgive because he said so. How? How do you forgive in that sort of a situation? What do you do when you just know it's going to go on and on? I'd love to be able to say to you, and I forgave her, and now we're best friends. You know, my sister and I have not had a good adult conversation ever. Ever. She'll talk to me on the phone for about 2 minutes if I have a question that she feels like she needs to be the one who can supply help. The last time I spoke with her in person was 5 years ago. And her conversation went like this. Oh, you're here. Righto. Well, I guess you had to be. It's a family event after all. Okay. Well, I'm going to stay over here. You go over there. And this is the person I grew up with. And I haven't had a lot to do with her. And it's not for lack of trying. We invite her to everything. Come to the birthdays. Come to our celebrations. Come to. She doesn't come. She doesn't want to come near me. Now, since I found out what went wrong, I've realized something very profound. My sister was deeply hurt by the church, and I am that church. I didn't hurt her. It wasn't me. But I represent everything that did hurt her. I represent everything that caused her grief and pain and agony. And now, whenever I'm near her, I trigger that pain in her. So she doesn't want to be around me because I am a trigger to the pain. And then she, not wanting to be around me, triggers the pain in me of rejection. My sister is rejecting me. Mm. Oh, my goodness. You know my parents. Some of you know my parents. They come here to Rangeville. They are amazing parents. I grew up in a brilliant family. And they did a brilliant job. And they still have good connection with my sister. They see her regularly. They spend time with her. And there's good connection. But I trigger her. She can't come near me because I'm still in ministry. I still passionately follow God. I still love the church. I still want to be there. But that wasn't always the case. I needed help to forgive. Because this type of obedience is a journey of obedience. This type of forgiveness, it's a journey of obedience. You're choosing to do it not because of what you get out of it, but because he told me to do it. He said so. Matthew 6:12, he says, "And forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors." I have to forgive my sister. Because it affects his forgiveness of me. I have to forgive her. It's not a choice. I choose to do it because he told me to do it. And then Peter said, "Lord, how many times should I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Should I forgive as many 7 times? You all know that passage of scripture. And Jesus says, "No, not just 7. And he goes on and he gives a figure that in Hebrew, when you work it out in the Hebrew language, it means forever, continue, keep going. I remember growing up and thinking, why would you ever have to do that? Just walk away from the person who hurts you like that. Don't go near him. Don't let him hurt you so often. I can't. She's my sister. I can't walk away. I have to walk through this journey of pain and forgiveness and pain and forgiveness and pain and forgiveness. And the outcome is relied totally on God doing a miracle in her heart. Because I'm not going to walk away from God. I'm not going to walk away from my church family. I'm not going to bow down to her not wanting to be part of God's family. So it relies on God touching her heart. I have a picture here. Look at this. I brought some props. Excited about this? See this? For the longest time after I found out what had gone wrong with my sister, I just didn't know what to do about it. I wasn't sure where to go. I wasn't sure how to process. I wasn't sure how to proceed because I had been in ministry my whole life. I left my high school and I went straight into an internship, like what Ben Southers is doing here. I went into an internship. And I wanted to be in ministry. I wanted to be a missionary. I wanted to be a minister. I wanted to be in ministry. That's all I wanted to do all my life. And this one day, my parents sat down and explained to me what went wrong, what happened. And this has only happened in the last decade. Mum and Dad have told me what happened. And that I needed help because at that moment, there was a chain that just... It attached itself to that revelation and I couldn't move on from there. And I was stuck realizing what I just shared with you, realizing that every time I was near her, I was triggering her and I was lost. I didn't know what to do. I was stuck. As a teenager, I was pretty stuck as well. I didn't know how to move into the process of being forgiven, of forgiving her. There's a couple of people up the back who know who this lady is. Her name is Chris McDonald. And Chris saved me from walking away from God. I was out the door. I had had enough of the church and God, who let it happen to my sister. I didn't want to be near my family. It was just a chaotic time of my life. And Chris was there. And one Sunday night, it was the night I had decided. I had chosen that that was it, no more. Tonight was my last night at church and I wasn't coming back. In fact, I was heading off. I talked to a university friend. I was moving in with them and we were going to go do stuff. I didn't know what stuff we were going to do, but we were going to go do stuff. She was not a Christian, so we were going to do fun stuff because the church was no more fun. And I was just on my way out the door and this was my last hurrah. And I was at church that night and Chris came up to me and we hadn't had a lot to do with each other before that. And she put her arm around me and she said, "He doesn't want you hurting like this all the time. Here's my address. Come hang out with me this week. How about Wednesday afternoon?" Oh, okay. Every single Wednesday afternoon for the next year, I went to Chris's house. Every single Wednesday, I was with her all the way through until late at night. And she and her husband took me into the house and they listened to my sad sob stories. And at the end of each time, so there became a bit of a routine. In the afternoon, I would arrive and I would go sit with Laurie, her husband, and we would study Revelations together. And we would study. We would go through this book of Revelation. It took us a year to go through the whole book and we just studied every week together. Then we would have dinner together. And as we were cleaning up, I'd be helping Chris clean up. She would listen to my woes. My what is hurting me right now? What has my sister done recently? Why is, you know, all the pain that I was going through? And at the end, she'd pull the sink, the plug out of the sink and she'd wipe the sink down. She'd say, "Okay, now, Sarah, it's time for you to package that up. Put it into a spiritual box and give it to God. It's finished. No more." And then she would turn around and she would grab my hand and she would say, "Father, our Father, this pain, this hurt, and this burden is now yours. We choose forgiveness, even though we're going to have to choose forgiveness again next week. In Jesus' name. Amen." Every single week for a whole year, actually it was longer than a year, she walked me through the journey of forgiveness. And now I know it is going to be a journey of forgiveness. Unless God does an incredible miracle, which we are praying for, I will be constantly living the pain and forgiving my sister. Living the pain and forgiving my sister. Why? Because she was so desperately hurt by the church. And that's my second one. The second area that I'd like to share with you this morning is what happens when church leadership causes you pain. You've already seen it. It tore our family apart. It broke us. And I'd love to be able to say to you that, well, after with Chris, I have stepped back into ministry and from there we've progressed through life and it's been smooth sailing since then. But it doesn't work that way. You know why? Because the church is full of people. And we people, we're not perfect, we're broken. And we're going to hurt each other. We're going to cause each other pain. We're not going to mean to, but we do. And leaders are no different. They're going to hurt us. I remember a realization one day I had. It was just moment. If I stumble across a drunk man in the street, my expectation of his behavior is zero, or maybe even negative. Like, I have no expectation that he is going to do anything good to me. No expectation at all. Now, if you if I stumble across you in the street, I know you, you go to my church, I have an expectation of good. I expect that we'll say hi, we'll hang out a little bit, we'll just catch up for a minute. It's a good expectation. I have expectation of my parents, that if I'm in pain, I can go talk to them, and they're there. But I have a completely unrealistic expectation of the perfection I expect from pastors. And I suspect that most of us do. We have this unrealistic expectation that the imperfect shell that they're in will never make a mistake and will never hurt us. And I've come to realize that that unrealistic expectation is what causes us the greatest pain. Because we put them on this pedestal of perfection, and when they fall off, it ruins us. Oh my goodness. They did bad things. And they hurt me. So I will challenge you today to consider, where are your expectations of our pastors, of your pastors? Hebrews 12, 14 to 15 says, make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. And see to it that no one falls short of the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. I have noticed in my own life that I get hurt by someone in leadership. So the first thing I do is I create an inner vow. Do you remember Pastor Andrew was talking about inner vows on Sunday?
Yeah.
I create that inner vow. I will never trust another Christian leader again. I don't want to get hurt again. I will never trust them again. Inner vow. So that ties me up. I'm stuck. And then I find myself getting bitter because I am completely offended by what has happened. And that bitterness becomes a chain that holds me into the past. That bitterness becomes a point where I can't move forward. Bitterness, resentment, division, inner vows, this all go along with unforgiveness. And it affects our relationships. You see, if I'm bitter towards a pastor who hurt me, you know, so I don't want to tell you big stories because I don't want to glorify the pain that has happened, but I will say this. One of the experiences that I had is that my own son got nastily hurt by a young pastor, young pastors, a couple in a church, and they hurt him, and they hurt him so badly. Now, you hurt me. Yeah. You hurt my child. Y'all know what I'm talking about. They hurt my child. And they didn't just hurt him. They pulled the rug out from under him and left him in agony. It was horrendous. It hurt him. It hurt our family. And it was, for me, the last straw of actually being part of ministry. Because, you see, that couple had come to Glenn and I and said, you know, you're much older than us and you're in ministry and we'd love for you to mentor us. And we agreed. So we were mentoring this couple at the same time as they destroyed my son. And the pain, oh my goodness, the pain that I felt. And this was me. I was bitter. I was resentful. Oh, I was divisive. And I definitely made inner vows. And it affected my relationships. I knew enough, I was mature enough to know that I couldn't go back to the church, because if I went back to the church, my relationship would have been like this. Oh, did you hear what they did to me?
No.
Did you hear what they did to my son? And that divisiveness, instead of being in me, would start to spread. And that is not what we are supposed to do. So I knew enough not to do that. But that root of bitterness, it just holds you. And I haven't been in ministry from then until, I haven't done any sort of ministry from then until I arrived here at Rangeville. I was preaching in conferences around the world. I spoke in 18 different nations. I've preached prophetically in three different languages. I've seen God work in absolutely massively incredible ways. And this one thing pulled me out. Stopped me. Wendy, come here. Wendy's known me since we were teenagers, and I'm putting her on the spot right now because I want to demonstrate something to you. So Wendy's going to stand over there by the speaker, and I want Wendy. Wendy is going to demonstrate. She's going to pretend to be where I am supposed to be moving. So I know I am called. I have a call of God. I am gifted. I know that. And I know that is where I'm supposed to be. But I've made an inner vow that I'm not going to get hurt. So I've built my little wall. Because I don't want to get hurt. So I'm just going to keep myself protected behind my wall. Because I don't want to get hurt. And I can see that I need to be doing ministry there. In fact, I need to be serving that person. But I don't want to get too close. And I certainly don't want to get close without protection. And this is my inner vow. My inner vow has built a wonderful wall. But how many of you know that with this here, I can't get to where I'm supposed to be? I can't be doing what God wants me to do. And let me tell you, if you're alive, and I don't think anybody's died while I've been preaching, therefore, you still have a call of God on your life. You still have something to do. And if you're not doing it, maybe you need to have a look and see. Maybe there's an inner vow. Can you come hold my wall? Or maybe you're stuck with the root of bitterness. Because the root of bitterness also keeps you anchored. You are stuck to the past. Because that pain happened in the past. You are stuck there. That event is, I keep it going over and over in my head because I'm bitter about it. I keep reliving it. I keep wondering what I could have done differently. I didn't protect my son. I should have protected my son. For crying out loud, I'm a prophet. I should have seen it coming. And I'm bitter about that. I'm angry about that. I'm angry at myself. I'm not just angry at them, I'm angry at myself. And this bitterness is in me and it is stopping me from anything. I can't get to where I'm supposed to be. I'm stuck. I'm in constant pain. I can't move forward because I'm stuck with bitterness and I can't trust anybody. Because if I go too close, I'm going to get hurt again. And I still have three other children who I'd like to live through this journey. I don't want to go near people. I don't want to go near church leaders because they can't be trusted. It's my inner vow. It hurt. Oh my goodness, it hurt. When you get hurt and you're in church, thank you. You're in church, there's this isolation that grows. Because in church, we have these beliefs. Oh, I should be over this by now. Good Christians don't hold grudges. Maybe I'm too sensitive. Or I'll just handle this one on my own. These are all things that went through my mind because of this hurt. They all sort of rotated through. Oh, my goodness, Sarah, you are a pastor for crying out loud. Surely you can get over this. Surely you can move on. Surely you can do this on your own. You don't need help. If you actually go to someone for help, you're admitting your weakness. You're admitting an area where you are struggling. Well, this type of journey, this type of forgiveness is a journey again. Oh, quite often it doesn't happen instantly. And I needed help again. And for me, here at Rangeville, Freedom Life. You all know Gail, right? Mm-hmm. I'm standing in the foyer. I'd only been at the church, we'd been here for about a month. And she walked up behind me and she said, "That call on your life is not going to go away but the pain could. And then she just kept walking. And I remember looking at her going, how dare you? You don't know who I am. You don't know what I've been through. You don't know my story. How dare you? And then my mother moved to Toowoomba. My mum and dad moved to Toowoomba, and she joined Freedom Life. It's a conspiracy. And my mum comes home and she starts talking to me about what she's learning. Oh, my goodness. We talk, and she's talking about inner vows, and I'm sitting there going, shut up. I don't want to hear it. Yep. Actually, I've definitely made an inner vow. Maybe two or three, probably six, seven, eight. Look, my life is just surrounded by inner vows. I built myself a little fortress. I don't just have a wall. I have a castle around me. I don't trust people. I don't want to be near people. Oh, my goodness, I was hurting. So eventually I went to the first Freedom Life session. Oh, it hurt because I don't like looking like I haven't got it all together. I grew up as the pastor's kid. You're supposed to have it all together. You're supposed to look like you've got it right. You're the good kid. I was always the good kid. I was the one who was in church. I was the one involved. So to sit in front of these people and say, I'm a mess, was really hard. And then to tell them why was even harder. Because it felt like I was going, here's my heart. Have a look at where it hurts. And what can you do about it? And that day we broke some inner vows and we dealt with some bitterness roots. And at the end of the Freedom Life session, there's such a good feeling. There's such a feeling of just freedom. That's why it's called Freedom Life. And part of that Freedom Life session was an awful lot of forgiving. An awful lot of forgiving. I mean, I had to go back to the very first pastor who'd ever hurt me and go through my journey of life and forgive every pastor, every leader who had hurt me or my family as I was growing up. And each time I did, it wasn't a joyful journey, let me tell you. Freedom Life Room was not a happy place that morning. My responses and reactions were not godly, wonderful responses. I don't want to forgive him. He hurt. No, let's do it next year or decade. No, he hurt and it still hurts. And I don't want to forgive. But I did. And I walked away from that Freedom Life session going, okay, all right, there's a bit of hope there. Okay. And that week, Sarah Wessling, she tapped me on the back of my shoulder in church. And she leaned forward and she said, you sing great. I love your harmonies. You should join the music team. And I leaned back and I went, no. I was so obedient. And I realised, you know, when you finish Freedom Life, there's a form you fill out. And on it is a question that says, do you need another session of ministry? So I finished that session and I wrote, no. Good. That was good. I needed that. Thank you. I can move on and I can continue on. Sarah taps me on the shoulder and I said, no. And I turned around and went, oh, boy, I guess I need to go back to Freedom Life. That didn't come from a place of godly wonderfulness. And at the next Freedom Life session, I learned about this wonderful root of bitterness. And that root of bitterness, if you jump on it pretty quick, it's not too hard to pull out. It's like roots, weeds in your garden. You see them the first time, you pick them out, and they're these tiny little things. You get rid of it, it's excellent. You leave it there for the next 20 years, pulling that sucker out's going to be hard work. That was me. When I went in there to deal with that root of bitterness, it wasn't just one root of bitterness. There was a multitude, a rainbow-coloured root of bitterness that had dug itself in and all around me. And we dealt with that. And I felt like I could breathe again. I felt like, oh, wow. Wow, what have I been living in? Oh, wow, that okay. That's good. And I walked outside and I filled out the form and the question says, are you done? And I went, I'm not sure. Well, we'll just keep that option open. later that week, Corinne came and saw me and she said, hey, would you mind joining the team of people who host at the church? You know, you're the ones who jump up and say welcome and they pray. And I'm like, yes. Maybe once every now and then I could do it for you. And there's still fear in me because you're people. And I'm a people. And we people aren't perfect. And we're going to hurt each other. And Gail came up to me that Sunday. I love Gail. Most days. And she put her arm around me and she said, now you have to move forward. Now you have to keep moving. Don't stand where you have been. Move forward. Say yes. Now, I don't know if they'd been talking about it and they ganged up on me. I'm not sure. But what she said rang true, okay? I do. I need to. Okay. And I did. I took a step forward. And, you know, I hosted the church. And then a few months later, Katie came and said, can you come join the worship team? And I went, yes. Because every time you step into ministry, every time you step into a position where you are in the church and you're helping and you're stepping out and you're working with people, you're putting yourself at risk. Every time I get up there, there's a risk of somebody being critical of me. Somebody who doesn't love my pink shoes. Somebody who doesn't love my enthusiasm for life. There's a risk. And then when Pastor Andrew came this year and said to me, would you like to preach in January? I went, oh. Oh, wow. Yes, I'd love to. And then I went away all week thinking about how I should, what the email should say to say, actually, I may change my mind. No, change my mind. Thank you for the kind offer. It was very thoughtful. And maybe one day, but not today. And I get to church on Sunday and I'm practicing and rehearsing what I'm going to say to Andrew. And Gail walks past. And she just does this, don't you dare say no. And I went, oh, I guess I'm preaching. And so here, if you were here in January when I preached, there were three things that had to happen that morning. Number one, I had to preach. And that had not happened since the last time I was so hurt in the church. Number two, I had to involve my family because that's also a painful journey. And number three, I wanted to express hope everywhere I went. Free forgiveness. I call it freedom forgiveness because when you genuinely forgive, there is freedom. It may not be freedom from the situation, but there is freedom. And when I chose to forgive, I released them from the debt that they owed me. Those pastors, they owe me nothing. Those people who have hurt me in the past, they owe me nothing. My sister, she owes me nothing. They don't owe me anything because Jesus paid their debt. And I'm not replaying the offense. Up until Freedom Life, I would play that event in my mind at least once a week. And every time I would go, right, what would I do different? How could I stop this? It's gone. It's happened. There's nothing I can do. But I am replaying it and it is making me bitter and bitter and bitter. I'm refusing to let their actions define my future. I knocked down my wall, my castle. I got rid of this bitter root. And I went back to Freedom Life 2 weeks ago for my third session. And there's a freedom in me and a healing in me that allows me to draw on God's grace in the midst of any situation where I'm hurt. So that now when something happens with my sister and I don't get to see it and I don't get to, her son has had a baby. I have not met my great nephew. Likely never will. But instead of that being a sharp panging, oh my goodness, someone just stabbed me and hurt me, it was a, all right, someone else to add to my prayer list. I've got a great nephew I've got to pray for. God's got someone else to draw back into his family. This is cool. Instead of it being stinging sharp pain, there's grace. It didn't make the situation go away, but now there's grace. And there's an opening my heart to more healing. So the first two Freedom Life sessions were crucial in dealing with my inner vows and my bitter root. Well, I went back for a third session because my heart is open. Forgiveness has made room for me to see my heart be healed more. God, what else needs to be healed? What else do I need to be doing? What else do you want me to do? I want to finish one thing and say, in those two stories, and I have lots of stories I could tell, in both of those, there was someone who helped me. In both of those situations, because I couldn't do it on my own, I was stuck. I couldn't get out of the mess myself. I'll read those to you, and I want you to imagine yourself being this person. You witness someone else's pain without trying to fix it. You remind the person that you're with of God's character when their vision is clouded. You speak truth when the lies in their life whisper the loudest. You celebrate small steps forward with them. And then you help catch them when they stumble. And right now, I believe that is what this church needs. You. I want to pray for people this morning. But first I want to challenge you. Each of you sitting in here have a lifetime of God's faithfulness lived in you. You carry wisdom that my daughter is yet to experience. You have lived a life of ups and downs and seen God's faithfulness that they are just starting on that journey. You know, when you step out of your family's house and launch into your first adult years, my daughter's 19 now, that first year of stretching, oh yeah, I'm an adult. Oh, I don't know what that means, but I'm an adult. What it meant for her is she had to vote. That's all it meant, really. Young mums, we've got young mums. You have young mums here every single week. These mums need you. They need you not to come and sit around your little table. I'm going to be a bit brutal right now, sorry. You may never want me back again. They need you not to sit around your little table and catch up with your friends because that's nice and comfortable. They need you to step out of your comfort zone and reach out to love them. Because do you remember what it was like when you were a first-time mum or when you have lots of little children? Do you remember? Do you remember how isolating, how alone you felt, how overwhelmed you felt? Do you remember that? Double it. Because in this day, in this generation, the culture of the day is isolation. People join with each other online. There's an isolation that you don't even know, you don't grasp. These ladies are bringing up children in a way and in a culture that you don't quite grasp. So go be with them. Go talk to them. Go offer to hold a baby. Go invite them to your house and maybe put your glass stuff away so that they don't destroy it. Or meet them in a park. Be there so that there's a mum who can go, oh, my mum's just not coping. And instead of trying to solve her problems, listen. You, each of you in here, have more wisdom and you can do this. I'm not asking you to fix it. What I'm asking you to do is to step up and do for them what people have done for me. Because if they hadn't done that for me, I'd still be in my castle, isolated from everyone, with a root of bitterness that wasn't letting me get close to anybody. I would not be on the worship team, I would not be hosting, and I sure as heck wouldn't be preaching again. So these are my two challenges for you. Help somebody. Look outside of your little world and help somebody. Look around on a Sunday and help somebody. Look around on a Tuesday and help somebody. And number two, if you are in a situation where it is just hurt on hurt on hurt, it's just this ongoing hurt, I want to pray for you. So I'd like to pray for two groups. Is it okay if we, I know I'm about to hit the end of time, but I'd like to pray for people. So I don't know how this ends, but if you don't need prayer and you don't want to be here, blessings. It's been wonderful to be with you. I hope you enjoyed my wall. But those of you who you feel like, wow, God is doing something in my life, those of you who need healing, you need prayer, you need his grace, there's a line down the middle. Grace people, you come over here. I want to pray for you. I want to lay hands on you and see that God does some healing and helps you through, because we need his grace to walk through pain on pain on pain. And then on this side, those of you who have gone, oh, I do. I want to pour my life into someone else. I want to walk alongside some of those younger people. I want to be there and I want to walk in. And for some of you, you'll be here first, and then once I pray for you, you can pop over here. Okay, so you don't have to choose one or the other. All right, but I'll be praying for these people first, so you know, hang out. I want to pray for you. I want to see God do for you what he did for me. He healed me. He freed me. And now I'm standing here because of that. Father, thank you. You are the God who heals. You are the God who frees. And you are the God who forgives us. We really don't deserve it. We love you, we honor you, we glorify you, and we follow you. In Jesus' name, amen.